So we're sitting here at the Kesher Nafshi fundraiser. I have the privilege to be sitting with my dear beloved friend and mentor, Rabbi Shimon Russell, who I think I don't have to introduce to the audience. But let's say he's a world-renowned therapist, mentor, educator. And we had the privilege for many years to attend together Kesher Nafshi Shabbatons for parents who are struggling with their children. So now we have the privilege to sit once again and talk about ourselves and our work. We're all work in progress, all of us. I don't think any one of us came down to this world perfect. If we would have come down perfect, we could have stayed up there. And we're all trying to become better people, better Jews, better parents, better teachers, better educators, better principals, better mentors, better human beings, better Ovdei Hashem, especially as teachers and as educators and as parents. So that's what we want to explore.
Absolutely.
None of us have all the answers to all the questions. All of us, I think, could learn more, can grow more, can challenge ourselves more. So I'm going to begin.
My pleasure. Always okay. My pleasure to sit with you.
Thank you, Rabbi Shimon.
These sugyas, it's just, I only regret that we spend a couple of hours together doing this. Each question, I don't know the questions, but each question is a world. And you could spend hours and hours to do it properly, to get to the depths of it. That's my only regret when I do these interviews, is that, it's like a quick answer. It's not really looking at the sugya deeply, nuanced, different variations of how to answer it, different circumstances. Each question is a course. Nevertheless, we'll do our best, but I hope the audience will understand. I really, truly, I hope they'll understand that in the context we're giving thought. We're trying to provoke thought and ten lechachem b'sachemayid. Not that what I'm going to say is the definitive answer to any of these questions.
Right.
That's absurd.
Right. And someone asked me a question. I shared it with my wife. She said it's an obnoxious question. It's an obnoxious question. But I'm going to have the chutzpah to ask it. And the reason is because I thought it would actually help people understand where you're coming from and who you are as a human being. Not just as a professional therapist in Lakewood or now in Yerushalayim, but who you are as a human being, as a husband, as a father, as a mensch, as a human being. Someone asked me this question. I'm a little embarrassed to repeat it. But I feel awkward. Yeah, you could see on my body language, which is a big thing in your book. Facial expressions, body language. Your kids don't hear what you say. They watch your body language. Okay,
sure,
so you could see my body language. So this person said, I don't understand. Why are people going to listen to Rabbi Shimon Russell when he's absolutely a failure? Because as he himself admits, so many of his own children have struggled so much with Yiddishkeit or with other things, which means he was an absolute failure as a parent. Why is he preaching and pontificating about subjects he has failed miserably with? He should just say, I really don't know what I'm doing. Have a good day. I'm moving to New Zealand. This was basically the question, not verbatim. And I thought, let me address it.
You sure did.
And I apologize.
It's no reason to apologize. Any thinking person could have that question, does have that question. Frequently I've been asked that question in one form or another, and it's a good question. I never divulge publicly the details that belong to my children. That's their lives. You'd have to ask them for their perspective. What I, with the rishus of my children, have discussed is where my wife and I began to realize how we didn't understand what was happening. Those with a variety of quite serious learning disabilities, de facto learning disabilities that we failed to grasp and understand. We were busy with medical issues with one of our kids. We just didn't see it. We were busy, like I think most decent, healthy parents, just trying to do the best they could with their kids, keep them in the system, keep them learning, encourage them, inspire them. And slowly but surely, we watched like dominoes that what we were doing, which was really conventional, regular chinuch that I absorbed from my rebbeim, that I read in books, the common sense told me, just was failing our kids, wasn't working. The hardest part of it all, you know, yes, was there a time when I viewed myself as a failure? I did some serious, serious soul searching in the very early years, perhaps 25 years ago, when it started happening. And I had the same kasha on myself. I had the same question. And I actually was exploring changing professions at that time. But I got Siyata Dishmaya and good hadracha from my rebbeim, and eventually emerged over a long, long, long period of growth to discover that my children became my greatest mentors, my greatest teachers. And through working through their issues, it became such a gift to my life. It sounds, you know, I'm nervous that it should sound arrogant, because certainly not on the back of my children did I become who I am. But it was through the struggles we went through that I freed myself to do what is so fundamental to chinuch, which is really to look at my children, to understand who are you, not who do I wish for and want you to be, not who am I going to try and leverage you to be, but who are you? And what happened for me was some amazing experiences as I discovered that as I engaged them for who they were, I became a different person. As we said in the book, in the before the beginning of the book, there's a statement that the journey of parenting is not just about who your children become, but it's about who you become in the process. It was in that very, very, very early days that I saw the difference, and I changed the beautiful Tzar Gidl Bonim, this line, to Tzar Gidl Koma Bonim. The Tzar of my Gidl would come through my children. And I abandoned the idea of feeling like a failure. On the contrary, I felt very humbled by it. It was very good for arrogance. That was very good for gaiva, extremely good for that. We did have a lot of pain over this, but my wife and I emerged into a place where we allowed the children to guide us, becoming better people, kinder people, more attuned people. And then Chazal opened up to me, and it was amazing, and I saw it everywhere. As I do, it's like astonishing almost. Every time I learn, I see things that I'd never seen before about guiding us in chinuch and understanding our children better. So, you know, we did have the feeling of failure. It did occur. We overcame that. And I'm not proud, you know, of what it is. I'm grateful that the process made me a better person. My Rebbe, I have still such a hard time saying Zeichus Alivracha, but Rematzio, I miss him so much, but he had said to me when we had our Gezegenzach and I left Eretz Yisrael, he said to me one time, Shimon, he said, take this in the nicest way, but if I was the Eibishter, I would only give you struggling kids because I trust you to help them.
Wow.
Is that a fair answer?
Very. What do you think was and is for many of us the greatest form of resistance to make that shift in consciousness, a shift in consciousness that it seems like you're describing from when it was your children's problem to when you decided, when you had to become a different person?
Yeah,
what's the resistance to that shift?
The resistance?
Ego?
I think it's ego and trauma. I think that we're all frail on some level. And when it goes wrong, we know that the world around us, like just the very fact you asked this question, you know, this is 30 years later through our struggles, and the question is still being asked. So unless you've done your ego work, unless you've done your trauma work, then it's going to touch a place inside you, very, very understandably, where it will trigger your own sense of failure and inadequacy. And you're going to start viewing your journey of parenting through your own inadequacy and ego instead of seeing your kids, instead of seeing them. You're really seeing yourself.
How do I know the difference as a parent if I'm responding, disciplining, educating my children from a place of love, or I'm responding to my own unresolved wounds and coping mechanisms? Because my own trauma does not come to me and say, hey, you're Mr. Trauma, you're Mrs. Trauma. Sure. My trauma says, Hashem wants Torah, Messiah, Emunah, what is this, a new liberal progressive generation of Efkeris? My trauma doesn't call itself trauma. Sure. It calls itself religion, Yerushalayim. I don't know what it calls itself. How do I know the difference?
Well, one of the things I asked myself that I ask my clients and people I work with, Keshe Nafshi, parents, you know, when they've, I ask them, so what do you do, you know, to, you know, straighten out your kid when you feel your child is not obeying you? And they tell me their stories, which almost always sound like laced with anger, frustration, disappointment. So the question I ask them, and sometimes it's a devastating question, and it's such a simple question, like, how well is that working for you? How well is that working for you? And most people have no answer because they know it's not.
Wow.
And when you know what you're doing, you're an intelligent man. I mean, we're intelligent people. We're kind, caring, and good people, all of us. You know, we're not talking about monsters here. We're talking about very nice people who are repeating patterns of behavior towards their child that is profoundly not working and pushing your kid away. So we ask ourselves the question, how well is that working for you? And when you realize you're repeating the same stuff again that's not working at all, well, chances are that's coming from the wrong place. It's not about your child. It's coming from about you defending yourself, your ego, who you are. And that's why you repeat the wrong things, even though you're bad, some a kind person.
Is there a way for me to catch myself in the moment, like your kid comes into the kitchen 1 a.m, there's nothing to eat in this house? Or, no, I'm not going to shul Shabbos morning. Why should I go to shul? It's boring, and you also don't daven tat. Whatever it is there a way for Tati or Mommy to catch themselves in the moment as the trigger is developing in my brain before the explosion, before the implosion? What's the mechanism? Can you describe, like, can you play it out for me?
Yeah,
there's nothing to eat in this house. There's nothing to eat.
If that's the starting point of your journey, dealing with your own trauma, you will not do anything good. You will not succeed. But if you can then sit down afterwards when you realize, I just pushed my child away from me. Like, I love this child. I love this child. Even at that worst moment, if I was, God forbid, to hear a basura, that child died, I'd be utterly devastated. I love my child. So then why am I treating them in a way that pushes them away from me? After the incident, that's when we need to settle down and start getting the advice and guidance that clearly I'm operating with my child from some primitive part of myself that's not the rational, healthy, adult, mature self.
In other words, it's the 2-year-old inside of me talking to the 15-year-old.
Exactly, something like
so
that.
So I'm actually the baby in the process.
In a certain way,
I need a parent.
Yeah. And that's probably what's happening, is the child is making me feel inadequate. And that goes back to the inadequacy I felt as a child that was never resolved. So I rise up angrily. I'm not even angry with my kid. I'm really angry with the people who made me feel that inadequate to begin with, which by now is the world. It's the whole world I'm angry with. I feel, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I feel can let me down. Like it's not attuned. When you know that your response is not attuned to what's happening and not reconnecting you to your child, well, you know something's off. Something is off.
Now my work is internal.
Internal.
I should not be communicating with my child because I'll say the wrong thing.
In the meantime, I mean, a person needs help to work out what are those internal truths. In the meantime, there's a very simple, simple technique that everyone would benefit from using. It doesn't fix the problem, but it helps us. Pause, breathe. Pause and breathe. Pause. Don't ever respond in that moment of urgency. If you feel like this profound urgency to react, don't. Pause, breathe. Pause and breathe is not just a stalling tactic. It's actually a way of partially settling your nervous system. So you can bring yourself a little bit back more online and be thoughtful in how you're going to respond. Pause, breathe. I noticed in my own life how over the years of doing this work, I speak slower, I breathe deeper, I speak softer. In the interactive, in a relationship with my children and those who come to me who are in severe trauma states, I slow my speech, I breathe deeper, and then I co-regulate. I help someone else calm down. So in the moment of that interaction, you're not going to fix your own internal triggers. That you need to recognize, okay, it's time. I need to go and fix them. In the meantime, pause and breathe and tune into what they're saying.
So what you're really suggesting is that a major part of education requires self-awareness. Parents are talking about my child, my kid, my boy, my girl. Where's the nachas? Where's the Yir Shamayim? We have such a beautiful house. I have Mesiras Nefesh for my Shabbos table, and they're destroying everything, and they're not interested. And you're saying, stop talking about your children and gain a little self-awareness.
Start looking at yourself. Because in truth, we ought to be engaging our children. Like all children, without any exception, when they come in the world, need structure, rules, and discipline to thrive. All children. They need structure. Aya pera odam yevolid, right? Like the altar said, like a wild animal they're born. They need they need us to create structure for them, whether it's bedtime structure or Shabbos table structure or clothing structure or, you know, hygiene structure. They need structure to be able to survive. So we can't have a philosophical conversation with a four-year-old about why I'm imposing structure on you. That's something we mature people, adults, we do for our kids to help them be able to function in a society one day. So we impose structure. How do we do the structure? So we create rules and we communicate the rules. When bedtime is, when this is, how you have to get dressed, not poking your brother in the ear at the table, you know, being polite, we give them rules. The rules are designed to give kids a parameter, boundaries, definition of what is the structure that we feel is healthy for them so they can live productive lives. Comes along discipline when they don't keep the rules, so we offer discipline in order to uphold the rules which were designed to create the structure. There is no tachlis in rules and discipline if not for helping support structure. The purpose is structure. Stop getting angry. Chesach Shifter Sayinu B'nai is not a standalone concept in Mishlei. It's a means to an end. The end being structure. That's what we're after. Not just running around with a stick. There's some Chayiv Kaddish to have a stick. That's not the point. So if we're doing that, but undermining the administration of the rules and the discipline through getting angry, mad, loud in this generation, I can't tell you about I wasn't there, you know, so I can't tell you how it worked. But I can tell you in this generation, getting angry, mad, losing one's self-control while trying to do the discipline or the rules whose tachlis is only to enforce the structure, losing control undermines the very message of the rules and discipline and therefore undermines the structure. So then a parent has to stand back and saying, huh, I'm doing rules and discipline in order to create the structure, but in the very delivery of the rules and discipline, I'm undermining their ability to be effective because I'm intimidating and making my kids scared and frightened of me, therefore undermining that the structure is a benefit to them. They just see me as an evil enemy. So that's the point where I have to take a look at myself and say, huh, what is wrong with me that I'm not delivering the rules and the discipline in a way that's utilitarian and will help my children be able to adopt the structure, which is the tachlis of my parenting. Therefore, it must be something about me, so let me get help. Because I would like to learn how to convey the rules and discipline in a way that my child can absorb and receive them, and therefore know that what I'm doing is in their best interest. When I get angry and mad, my child doesn't experience them as in my best interest. They experience an angry father who basically, he's being inconvenienced by my lack of being disciplined. This is about him. It's not about me. I would never occur to me. It's about my best interest to grow up as a healthy person.
So then maybe is it possible that for so many of us, our own wounds and coping mechanisms are so repressed, we are so unaware of the patterns we have created to survive, that it's really God's kindness to us to cause our children to challenge us and trigger us and make us meshuggah and overwhelmed, just so that we should be able to actually be healed. We should be able to say, wow, you are triggering me. What is going on in me? And it brings it to the fore, and I can actually deal with it. In other words, our children are really mentoring us, even if it's unintentionally.
Absolutely. It may be that our generation, you know, before Mashiach is coming together, that's exactly Heshev Leibonim Alavavos, that maybe
Rashi says, "Are you Deibonim? Heshev Leibavos Albonim? Are you Deibonim?
Deibonim, exactly.
The children bring back their fathers.
It's through them that somehow, you know, Mashkir Sali once said the pasuk in Eicha Tishtach Pena Avni Kodesh Berosh Kol Chutzos, and it says Rashi says they're the Bonim. It's talking about Avnei Kodesh. It's obviously talking about the holy stones of the Beis HaMikdash, and yet Rashi says Abonim. So Mashkiach said something amazing. He said the tachlis of Chorban Bayis was to create widespread tshuva for Klal Yisrael, bring us all back to Bara Olam, to realize what we'd lost, this diamond, this treasure, so we would come back and do tshuva. Zog the Mashkiach, every Puronius HaKlal through history was designed for the same purpose. So whether it was the Spanish Inquisition or Tach V'Tat or the Holocaust in our times, every Puronius HaKlal was designed to bring us back to Bara Olam, to make widespread tshuva. So he said like this, he thinks that Rashi is referring to what will happen at the end of days if we don't listen to all these messages. Elu Habonim, this message will come through our children. Our children will finally wake up. Our most precious, precious possession will wake us up to take a look at ourselves and ask, are we really authentic in our Avodas Hashem? Are we really connected with love? Are we modeling a loving relationship with the child so that when a child matriculates, they will transfer the loving relationship with their of to the Av Horachamon, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we will have instilled a metaphor, despite, and when do you do that best? When they defy you. When they defy you, and you don't ignore them, you respond, and you teach them how to behave, and you do it in a loving and caring way, you inculcate in your child that my father is an Av Horachamon. So when they matriculate, they can transfer that experience to Bara Olam, which I think is probably the tachlis of the whole thing on a deeper level.
So if I am regulated, I'm regulated, a mother, a father, they're regulated in their brain, in their system, their nervous system, as you say. What does chinuch look like versus if I'm dysregulated? Can you give me the two conversations? I'm dysregulated. My child is not behaving. Maybe he's hitting his brothers. Maybe he's older and he's doing things very inappropriate, maybe embarrassing for me.
Sure.
But I'm regulated versus when I'm dysregulated. Or to put it differently, what is my response when I'm attuned to actual chinuch? And what is my response when it's not about chinuch, it's just about own survival?
Yeah, it plays out very simply. We want, ideally, in the yesodus of chinuch, that my child should experience, I'm not saying never necessarily intellectually experience, because they're little, but their nervous system, their body, their whatever, their internal mechanism should experience that which I am controlling, directing, creating gvulot, you know, rules, structure, boundaries on them. In other words, interfering with their ability to have fun, sometimes, or stay up, whatever they're doing, that which I'm doing interfering with their desire is only l'to'eles for them. It's not that I'm parenting out of convenience. I'm parenting out of fear. I'm parenting out of friendship. I'm parenting because I'm afraid of what the neighbors are going to say about me. That my child experiences my parenting, chinuch, what I'm doing for them, is kol kulay about their development and success in this world. When I lose myself in the process, I'm really reflecting back to my child that what I'm trying to stop you doing is because you're hurting me. You're offending me. You're upsetting me. It isn't about I want you to be a successful human being and therefore I'm trying to help you. And that's why I'm standing up to you and saying no, is because I want you to be accomplished and successful and to have a wonderful life. We sacrifice that when I lose myself and I parent out of my own fear, anxiety, or shame. So then the child doesn't experience that. And what we're actually conditioning them to believe is that I can't trust my parent, that my parent is only interested in themselves. This is about them, which creates profound insecurity, instability inside the child's world. A child needs to know that what my parent is trying to do for me, even when they say no, in fact, specifically when they say no, it's actually to elicit from me. They will get that from the smile on my face. They will get that from my relaxed posture. They'll get that from me saying to them, look, if you want to take the ice pop, I'm a five-year-old, and I'm going to take an ice pop. You say, no, please don't, we're having supper now. And the kid says, I don't care, I need one. And you say to the child, I understand you need a shefala, but after supper, I don't want you to, you know, lose your appetite. I want you to have a good supper. I'm taking one. And then you look at the child and you say, well, go ahead. I'm not stopping you. And they say, well, can I take it? I said, I told you not to. But then you just said, I said, I'm not going to stop you taking it. If you want to take it, take it. And then here's a consequence. This is what's going to happen. If you take it, you're going to go to bed. You're going to go to bed right after supper immediately. No playing. So that's up to you. But I'm not going to stop you taking it. And they look at you like, I'm taking it. I'm taking it. And you say, I know. And then you go to bed after supper. But you stay completely calm. And you don't run in front of the fridge or freezer and block them, intimidated by this five-year-old. You know, you stand there and padlock your fridge and tie it up to stop them taking it. You say, go ahead, I'm not stopping you.
Unless they're triggering the five-year-old in you who felt unsafe.
I will be in front of
that fridge. You will go to that refrigerator. You will finally take revenge against the adult who harassed you at the age of five.
My child will never know that I'm trying to do this for you. This is about you, not me.
He'll just see a parent out of whack.
Out of whack, yeah, exactly. And he'll never get the message that I need to self-discipline. This is good for me. My father's actually, it may be confusing. Again, there's not an intellectual thought in a five-year-old, but it's an experiential. That's they're experiencing by me staying calm and saying, look, I'm telling you not to, but I'm also telling you I'm not going to stop you, but if you take it, you go straight to bed after supper. These are your choices.
Shimon, I think this is what makes it difficult for many people, possibly. And that is the father and mother feel that they're just following the Shulchan Aruch. They're following the Torah. They're following the Ratzon Hashem. By a Shabbos table, you say a Dvar Torah. I'm paying tuition so that you should learn something in yeshiva. Tznius is something we have done for thousands of years. A Yamalke is Yerushamayim. Answering Amin Yehi Shmei Rabba or Barchu is sacred, etc., etc., etc. You're telling me, don't get angry, look at yourself. You have trauma from your parents, from your Zaydas, from your Babas, from the Nachash HaKadmaini. All very good. Psychobabble. I need to educate my kid. He is betraying Shulchan Aruch. This is not personal. I'm not fighting for money or covet here. I'm fighting to create Erlich Yiddish Adoris. Now you're hacking with me, my coping mechanisms, my trauma. I never saw in Shulchan Aruch the word trauma. Where did you invent this from?
Okay, so this is already a workshop. This question is a workshop. You know, if you were to ask me, you know, if I had like 2-3 minutes to make one statement, you know, to parents and mechanchim, from something I've learned about life that I kind of wish I'd known then. So here's what I would say, and then we'll come to the answer. So We all know there's a mitzvah in the Torah, period. Have children. There's a mitzvah. Beautiful mitzvah. We should have children. A chelik of that mitzvah is actually a mitzvah called L'Sheves Yitzara. L'So Bara L'Sheves Yitzara, Pasuk in Shayo, which says that Eibishter wanted to fill the world with people. He wanted the world to be full of a yeshuv of people. So what is that mitzvah? So I don't want to go into the details now, it's Alam Dishashir. But what it means to me, and I've discussed this with various Gedolei Yisrael, it means to me that Eibishter wanted a world full of healthy people. That means like this. We should try and bring up our children to be healthy in body and mind, to be happy, to be capable of self-love, and capable of loving others. That's our goal. That's what we're meant to be doing. That's the mitzvah l'sheves yitzara. Bring up healthy people. People who can't be part of the yeshuv. That's not what the Eibishter wanted. He wanted a rise for it and nishfanel. At the same time, we have a chayv kaddish in Shulchan Aruch, a chinuch habanim. We have mechanech kids to mitzvahs. All the beautiful things you've said so eloquently a few minutes ago.
Shinantam levanecha.
We have a chiv as parents to teach our children. We madrich them in mitzvahs.
Chayshich shiftei seinecha.
Right, exactly. Now here's where I wish I'd known this, what I'm about to say. If there was one regret I have as a father, I didn't know this. The simplicity of what I'm about to say is going to be jarring to hear it at first. And I would only say if people are listening, if it's confusing what I'm about to say, it's the confusion is because we didn't have time to tease it out, not because it's be'etzem confusing. It's because we didn't have time to play. It's a novel idea, and there's no time to really tease it out. But here's the question I ask people. You have a dual mitzvah as a parent to bring up a healthy child, person capable of living with the yeshuv. I repeat, healthy in body and mind, happy, capable of self-love and loving others. That's our chayv kaddish as parents. The same time we have a chayv kaddish from Shulchan Aruch to bring up children in the Derech HaTorah, Torah mitzvahs. Here's the shayla, talking about pre-bar mitzvah, little kids especially. What happens was that when, on the occasion, there seems to be a conflict between those two, what do you do? Which takes precedence? There's a conflict. You say to your kid comes down with no tzitzis, and you say to your child, Shefali, did you forget your tzitzis? And your child says, he's 6 years old, and he says, I hate my tzitzis. There's a conflict, right? Classic, easy thing that could happen. Doesn't have his yarmulke, she doesn't wear her tights, you know, something's off. And now there seems to be a conflict between
my child,
Shavis Yitzara, and Chinuch to mitzvahs. So, Fishteza, which comes first? Which is more important? If you can't do both at that moment, if you're trying to do both, which takes precedence? And the answer is the Shavis Yitzara, that we have to bring up healthy children, and therefore never compromise with a young child, ever compromise l'sheves yitzara for the sake of installing a mitzvah. So if I know, for example, there's a small group of kids who could handle chayzich shifta sayne b'nai, they can handle a tough parent who sends them by back upstairs, and it won't interfere with their development as a healthy person, then by all means, send them upstairs and give them the stern look, the angry look, you know, if that floats your boat, and you know, and get them to where the sitz is, and everything's good, as long as it doesn't shter l'sheves yitzara. But if, God forbid, it shters l'sheves yitzara, and they come down and they're
angry, you're wounding your child.
You're wounding your child in that process.
You're calling them disconnect. Or feel unsafe.
You're not teaching them self-love or loving others. You're not teaching them how to be happy. If you're interfering with the development of l'sheves yitzara, then you remind them once and you let it go at the moment. Let it go. And later on, you sit down with them in a way that does not interfere with the l'sheves yitzara. And you discuss the mitzvah, what's wrong with the tzitzis? And you know what you find out? You find out he's still wearing Mickey Mouse tzitzis. His parents didn't upgrade him to a nice pair of tzitzis, and the kids are making fun of him. Or someone chewed off half his tzitzis, and the boy next door is making fun of him. Who knows? But you sit down with him respectfully and lovingly, and you find out, what's the problem here? But that's within the confines of the Shevis Yisara. Now, if you've done your personal work, it's very possible that at that moment when there's a contradiction, you can uphold the Shevis Yisara beautifully because you did your personal work. But if you haven't done your personal work, chances are, in your zeal, which is totally understandable, to fulfill the mitzvah's chinuch and make my child listen to that Yeheshmei Rabba, get to shul on time, put his finger and daven properly. In my zeal to do that, I compromised, not by deliberate, it wasn't thoughtful, but by accident I compromised. The Shevi says, oh, bring up a healthy person. Ultimately, I'm mazik my child.
Tired Eden. As you know, our campaign is in full swing. We are already at 50% of our goal. Please take 5 minutes and donate a minimum of $36. Every single dollar will go to helping parents. We know how hard it is for these parents after going through many trials and tribulations with this nesoyin of having kids that are struggling. Please open your hearts now and donate a minimum of $36. We'll take $3,600, we'll take $36,000. But please donate right now. Thank you.
What's fascinating is that when we put the dogish on the Shevis Yisara, remember, they're meant to go side by side in normal chinuch. It's only when they're in conflict that we err on the side of always, always maintaining the Shevis Yisara. What parents report, what we discover, and everyone sees, and I just wish I'd known this earlier, is that you create a clay kibble for mitzvahs. That's what happens. When the Shevis Yisara is done properly, you create the clay kibble. So even if they're not ready now, they will be ready soon. I asked many Gedolei Yisrael, how many times did your, who had Gedolim for fathers, how many times did your father, like, mention to you, wash Negelvas in the morning, put on your tzitzis? How many times? Once. They reminded us once, they left it alone. There was none of this yelling and screaming.
So you're saying, on the contrary, if you really care about Torah and mitzvahs,
thank you.
You're saying something much deeper. You're not just saying health before religion.
No.
Healthy, happy, religious. You're saying something much deeper. If you want religion to be authentic.
That's right.
If you want it to permeate, to penetrate.
That's right.
To have longevity, that's rather right. than just superimposed, repressive, that they may abandon when they're older or correct. Just be angry. This is a prerequisite.
It's a prerequisite. Exactly.
If not, you're destroyed. V'chai behem v'loy sheyamos behem. That's what you're saying.
I think it's probably.
If Yiddishkeit is going to destroy the child, it's not Yiddishkeit.
It's, Yiddishkeit.
It's going to be a fake Yiddishkeit.
It's not what Yiddishkeit. It's going to
be just out of dread and
of course.
And stress.
Of course. And it's external.
It's all external.
It's not deeply felt inside, which is what we see.
So it's not that emotional health was victorious over Yiddishkeit. That is what Yiddishkeit needs. It needs people. It needs souls. It needs a healthy brain.
Exactly. And this is, to me, it was the most profound awareness that came to me and our journey through our parenting. And in fact, what's amazing is, let's go back to Keshen Ashi for just a brief moment. The entire model of crisis chinuch that I've been trying to teach in the world is about repairing the damaged attachment that happened because, for whatever, I'm not blaming anyone, I did the same mistake. But not doing the Shevis Yitzara properly created a child who was not capable of feeling good about themselves and self-love and loving others. The crisis chinuch approach is really what we're doing is repairing the damage, upholding the Shevis Yitzara, creating a healthy relationship.
A healthy clay kibble.
A healthy clay kibble. And what most kids will do with that, if we walk away from religion for the time being, with crisis chinuch, with children who are seriously, seriously in crisis, we walk away from that. But instead we focus on repairing the damaged attachments, relationships, love, creating a healthy person. Ruba de ruba, on their own, they start exploring religion. They go back to it and they want it back in their lives.
You're saying because if Torah mitzvahs is really the true path and the healthy path to life, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. That's what Hashem's blueprint is.
Correct.
So if you really create healthy children,
they naturally...
They want to be healthy people.
That's right. That's right. That's right. It was so profound to me where I saw this.
So you're saying that we should actually trust Yiddishkeit more. we should trust God's system a little more.
100%.
That if we have healthy and happy children, They want to live the best lives possible.
And if they
don't come, be so insecure about Judaism.
And when they come back, like the Gemara and Rashi needed to sign them a bit, whoever knows the Gemara, Vosag Rashi. It's just so amazing to me, people don't see it. Rashi zogged something so profound, right? It's Vosag Kobede Shemaim, Kol Midoisov, V'Kereisov Shel Adam, Boin Lo B'Gzeres Melech. That means my child has these struggles, Midoisov. Midoisov, they have character, a certain character that's, you know, we wish we'd know it when they're born, but we didn't. And Karaisov, the next door neighbor, the friend, the kid that bullied them, all the events that happened in their lives is how they reach their tikkun. That's the Ari Kodesh says. They go through their specific journey, and that's how they reach their tikkun. If we would see that and realize, my job is to privilege, the privilege I have as your father is to help you recognize these challenges and struggles that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave you, and I'm going to help you with it. I'm going to help you be the best you can be by being a healthy person.
So when the Gemara says, Chalal of Shabbos Achas Kadesh Yishmer Shabbos is Harbe, which is why every Hatzalah call goes out on Shabbos, you're essentially saying all of life is that way.
Look, I leave that.
If you're going to fight about this Shabbos, you're going to take him away from all the other Shabbos.
It's in a public setting, it's dangerous for me to, you know, because the lamdonim, you know, will it misinterpret what you just said. But conceptually, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I meant conceptually.
Conceptually, not specifically, but conceptually. Yeah, absolutely. 100% conceptually. That's the concept. Creating healthy people is the greatest possible way for Kiyum of Torah Mitzvahs is Pashut to me. Is Pashut. The authentic Torah and mitzvahs is incorporated internally and meaningfully in healthy people.
So now I understand. There's a medrash Tana de Eliyahu Rabba Perik Yudalad, which is a medrash from Eliyahu Anavi. Eliyahu Anavi said, a man asked me, he says, there's two things that I love, and I know they both precede the universe, Torah v'Yisrael, v'eini yodeya eza kodem. I love them both. So Eliyahu Hanavi said, the world says that Torah kadma, v'ani oimer, Yisrael kadmu l'Torah.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is Eliyahu Hanavi's, ani oimer, Yisrael kadmu l'Torah.
I think so. The work we do, I go back to what we wrote in the book. The journey of parenting is not just about who your children become, but about who you become in the process. When we see this simple truth, when I free myself to allow my children to refine me, to help me observe my own weaknesses, impediments, flaws, what I came back for, so they can help me orient towards my own repair and therefore my own fulfillment of my journey in this world. And then everyone wins. Everyone's a winner.
But it's very hard for many of us to let go of the expectations, the shame, and the ego, especially that all three are camouflaged as halacha, emunah, and teda.
Yeah,
we don't call it ego, shame, expectations. We call it God's expectations.
Sure. What's so fascinating about that is that, you know, in the yeshivish world, the chassidish world, we're all so keen on philosophically working on ourselves. The philosophy of being Ovdei Hashem by working on our midas, our ben adam lechaveiro, working on who I am as a person, like midas, working on midas, that's the mitzvah ben adam la'atzmai, to work on that is the yisod, the foundation, shari avoda, you know, we know that's the foundation for it all. That's why it's not included in Targ mitzvahs, because that's the foundation for the whole Targ mitzvahs. And we give,
take a deep breath.
Pause and breathe. I think we all believe this. Intellectually, I believe the Torah world would uphold and believe what I just said is the Ikar Ikarim of all of Avodas Hashem. Like the Gaon says, the Shklava says in the introduction, into Eben Shlema, that's the tachlis of person in this world is tikkun amidus.
Tikkun amidus.
Right, that's the tachlis. I think we all know
to work on ourselves
philosophically, but guess what? The greatest vehicle we ever have in our lives for working on our midos is our relationship with our children and our spouse.
Mm.
Those two are the greatest vehicles. Isn't it bizarre and odd that we don't recognize that we'd rather learn Sforim on Tikkun HaMidos than actually go home to the children and the spouse and do it? That's bizarre.
So you're saying when my child triggers me at the Shabbos table or the dinner table at any point of the day, that's actually the greatest opportunity for me to fulfill the mission for which I came down to the world.
The entire purpose of this world could be played out.
So I should cherish the opportunity to go inward.
Absolutely.
And heal myself.
Absolutely.
And learn how to respond from a place of love.
It's what I call an MDO, a Midas Development Opportunity. The child is stressing you at the table. I'm going to bring the best of who I am to that moment in order to help my child become a better person by me embodying the truths and beliefs of being an Erlich HaYid, a Ben Torah, while I deal with it. That's my goal. You know, we're not perfect people, but that's the goal. It has to be that I recognize that the struggles with my children and my spouse are more valuable to me than learning the Sforim about working on myself, but not actually taking it home and engaging the children and doing it. Like, again, this is topsy-turvy world, that we would engage ourselves quicker in the pursuit of analysis of the Sforim HaKadosh.
Shari Tshuvar, Chesedikim, Nefesh HaChayim, Mesilas Yesharim, everything.
We'll do that more passionately than doing the actual work those Sforim are telling us to do at the Shabbos table or with our spouse.
So you're saying many of us are like doctors, that when we're called for an emergency to save somebody, we say, no, I'm busy reading medical textbooks.
Yes.
I don't have time to go save anybody.
Well, again, I hate to be or sound cynical. You know, I want to be respectful. No one does any of this purposely.
Of course.
I think that we get lost. We get taken up in the moment. But if we would just sit, like again, it goes back to that question of, so how well is this working for you? How well is it working?
You're saying the proof is in the pudding. If your children are happy, healthy, passionate, and enthusiastic, you're doing the right thing. Yeah. If they're miserable and they hate your guts there's and they hate Judaism,
wrong. Something's wrong.
It's time to start asking deeper questions.
And again, that's not to blame the parents, because my thesis aligns with the idea that more or less good enough parenting will create more or less good enough children who will become more or less good enough adults, who will marry more or less good enough adults and have more or less good enough children. That's the process. However, if trauma strikes, and we know, you know, that today's not the time for us again to review all the different aspects of trauma, but when trauma strikes, it's become clearer and clearer to me that more or less good enough parenting wasn't enough. So if you have your own childhood trauma, and then trauma strikes your kid, more or less good enough parenting doesn't work. It won't be strong enough. That's what we do at Kesha Nafshi. What people report back to me is they've discovered that the primary dogish, well, that's really what, you know, people ask me, what is crisis chinuch? What does it mean? Can I, if you don't mind, I'll just... So crisis chinuch, we moved away from the chinuch, the dogish being on the kid. The first dogish is on me. In crisis chinuch, it's the first dogish is how can I recreate healthy attachment with my child so my child will be safe, secure, seen, and soothed by me prior to me doing any interventions to try and facilitate my child's behavior to change. The first dogish is not the child. The first dogish is me as a person. Well, isn't that syntonic with everything about Judaism, everything about Yahdus, everything about Dov Kaboy, the being an Eved Hashem? Doesn't that start with me working on me and my midas So therefore, yes, isn't the greatest gift my children?
Ask not what your children can do for you. Ask what you can do for your children.
Yes, well, in a way, it's that we have this symbiosis, that we sit back and realize that, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu put these children in my family? You know, I went on a journey 25 years ago, where I asked this question. Like, it wasn't conceivable to me that in the secular metaphor of the stork coming with the baby dropping down, but when HaKadosh Baruch Hu shipped the neshama, you know, husband and wife create a goof. They create a goof. They don't create a neshama. And the Eibishter, in his infinite wisdom, chooses where to put the neshama in which goof. This is posher to me in Hashkafas, Satayra, and Yadas, Eiskahal. So the question I ask myself is, if we're so messed up as parents, why did the Eibishter put that neshama there? Like, duh. If I'm so bad...
There was nobody else in Lakewood he could have found?
Next door creating a goof that night he could have found? Nobody else? Only the Russells. That doesn't make sense.
The messed up Russells.
Yeah, exactly. So it occurred to me, and I went on a very deep journey. You know, my learning changed, my Torah changed, my relationship to Yadus and Hashem changed. It all changed when I began to see Pnimiya Satayra. And it was so freeing for me. Because when I accepted, okay, the Eibishter gave me this child. So Weisterchus, this child is meant to be exposed to those siblings. Okay, let's take a deep breath. Let's take a deep breath. Aha. The sibling got traumatized. Before we ever knew, this child came in. The Eibishter put that in the neshama. What, he didn't know that they were going to be exposed to a sibling who was traumatized? Psst. Apparently he didn't know, right? That's kefira. So why did he put that child there? This simple philosophical question drove me crazy for years. I took the question to Gedolim and to Rebbes and Rabbanim, and everyone gave me the same answer. It has to be that they wanted that child to be exposed to this child. So why? Well, apparently, their reaction to that child was going to help them engage the specific work they need to do to heal their klipas that they came back to heal in this world. And it's my gift as a parent to help them do it. This wasn't Rachmanes Neber, you had that sibling. It had to be precise. Okay, so let's be mature. How do we do that? How do we help them?
It's lechatchila, not b'di'evet.
Not at all.
This wasn't a b'di'evet mistake.
No,
and if a random mutation.
Right. I say, look, the bracha, you know, I joke, the olim should take this, you know, my closest yedidim, when we were in those childbearing, you know, the years where we had our children, during, now it's, you know, the grandchildren, obviously, but in those years, and I would frequently go to Shalom Zochas of friends, yedidim, and Kiddush, you know, you give them the regular brachas, lachnisa, misish, lam, ravino, etc.
Asach nachas,
all the right brachas. And then I would pull them aside, only my closest yedidim. And I would say to them, listen, Yanko, whoever it was, I have another bracha for you. They say, okay. I say, Zolaybish to Helfen, that as soon as possible, that you and your rabbis, you should work out what's wrong with your baby. Why they came back, what the flaws are they brought back, find out what's wrong with them, and patiently and lovingly help them.
And they thought you were crazy.
It's what we're here for.
They thought you were cursing them?
No, my friends understood me well. It's what we're here for. And we all think we got this perfect child. Never dawned on us that, of course, they came back with imperfections. Kol midosav v'karosav, and they're going to have, karosav is that sibling who was traumatized, who's acting out in the home and driving everyone crazy, and they're born into such a home. That's Ratzon HaBorah. That's not an accident. Can we please embrace that? And could we please focus on what can I do to help you? How can I help you through this? Because I can't stop
you. You started to cry when you said those words, that they didn't come down perfect and we need to be here for them. What triggered that emotion? Was it just the thought of your own children?
No, it's the thought of Klal Yisrael's children. It's like these precious neshamas come back. You know, we daven Elokai neshamas shenasata b'tayrei. They're pure Tahar neshamas, but they're maliklipas. Especially now at the end of days with Gugulim, they're all maliklipas. Rabbi Nishalaylam, we expect them to be perfect. What are we saying?
They're dealing with a lot.
They're dealing with a lot. They have struggles.
They have to fix 5,000 years of history for Mashiach. They got to fix it all.
and we're privileged in this generation that we're getting these neshamas. Mm. Can't we reorient ourselves to see they're not a burden to our lives, but they're the gift of our lives? Can we not communicate to them, Shefali, you did nothing wrong. You have ADD, you have an impulse disorder. You're not going to make it very well in our system. That's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong.
Mm.
Can we start with that?
You don't have to be Rabbi Akiva Eiger.
No, you don't. You have to be you. So Psikta on this week's Parsha Truma, we just learned it, the Moshe Rabbeinu, the Psikta says it, the Kodesh, he said, Asulim Yitash V'Shechati Pesoichem. Moshe Rabbeinu said, we're going to make for the Rabbi Shalom. He fills the whole world, we shall make it. Zog the Psikta, no, he said to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was Nizdaza, how are we going to do that? And the Rabbi Shalom said, no, Lo lefi koichi, I'm asking you. Lefi koicham, I'm asking you for your koichas. Lo lefi koichi. He goes on to say, when he said, bring in the kesef and the zav. And Moshe Rabbeinu nizdaz and says, you own all the kesef and zav. What are we going to bring to you? And the Eibishter said, no. Lo lefi koichi, lefi koicham. Whatever you can bring. A machzah shekel. A little tiny thing. Bring something. Can we not look at our kids and realize what they're carrying back into this world? Who knows? So if we had an x-ray when they were born and we could, like, spiritually, we all the Mekubalim would come back from Friya Dikadoris and they would look at this child as it's born and put a tag and tell us exactly Vos Tutzuchto. We'd all go out of our minds. But that's our gift. So yeah, we have to overcome who we are to see that. And we have to gift our children. And that doesn't mean being weak and lame. On the contrary, that's my chayv kadosh, to see those struggles and help him. And that needs structure, and it needs rules, and it needs discipline. It needs our authority. It needs us setting the agenda of our homes. It needs us teaching them about Torah mitzvahs, but all under the framework of the Shevis Yitzhara.
From a place of health.
Of health. They want a healthy person. Yeah, Vada, we have to be. And sometimes we have to be tough and strong. But you can be tough and strong with kindness. You could say no to your child. The Shefala, he answers no. And they say, Tati, I hate you. And you look at your child and you say, that must be hard for you.
For this, you really have to be regulated.
Yes.
Your child telling you, I hate you. You're the worst Tati who ever lived. I wish I can have somebody else's content.
I remember the joy and emotion of reaching the place in life where I was able to look at my child, 6, 7-year-old, and say to them, that must be so hard for you.
And you were internally calm. That's the key.
Yeah.
Your child knows if you're internally calm.
Because I don't think my kid hated me. I think my kid was manipulating me and trying to get their way. And it was for me to teach them in a healthy way, Shefala, this is not about, you know, you hating me and you think, you know, I'm going to earn your love now by giving in. The answer is no. And no, I don't have to tell them, that's Shalom Pitayra. Shalom Pitayra, you can't say that to your father. That's also.
You don't speak like that to your father.
You don't speak like this. Chai Misa. Chai Misa speak like this. Guess what happens when you do it the other way? Later on, your kid comes in, sorry, Daddy. And they want a hug and a kiss, and I'm so sorry. And he said, okay, Shefala, you didn't mean it in the first place. He didn't mean it in the first place.
Why does a father say, you're not allowed to speak like this to me? It's a serious adibris. You know, if you curse your father, mice you must.
No, I don't know.
Why does a father do that? What triggered me?
That's your own internal stuff, because you got these two
misses. I feel worthless, basically,
triggered it. No, it's coming from a good place. A father, he's got this chayv of teaching mitzvahs, Torah mitzvahs. It's chinuch. I got to teach him. It's like a father once said to me, it was a Keshe Nafshi conference, and he meant well. He'd heard a whole Shabbos of all this kind of raid, and I think it was very, very hard for him to be the first time exposed to it. And on a Motzi Shabbos panel, he asked a very good question. And I was glad he asked it, because there was polite clapping around the room, which meant that other people were feeling the same way, and I was gratefully asked. But the question he asked was, I don't get all this. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, a kid has to be mechaber his parents. Sechiv in the Torah. Sechiv in the Torah. You know, kamis zavichav esmecha. I understand all this. We have to mechaber them, they have to mechaber us. Like, help me out here. And people clapped. I was grateful. So I said to him like this, let me ask you a question. Where is the sugya of parenting in the Torah? We've got everything. Shulchan Aruch covers everything. Everything, you name it, we got it. Where's parenting? Harut. Where is it? It's not there. So I have a Teretz Klali, I have a Teretz Prati. Teretz Klali is the whole Torah's parenting. We have to be Boni Matem Nashem Lakechem, the whole Torah's parenting. So that's a Teretz Klali. But I have a Teretz Prati. I said to him, I'll tell you exactly where the Sugya parenting is in the Torah. It's the fifth of the Aseres HaDibros. So he looked at me, right, that's the sugya of parenting. He didn't understand, so I said, let me see, I'll tell you how I feel. The chinuch zogt that the tam of kibud av aim is a kos hatov, right? He said, yeah, father, who's the kos hatov? And he got off again, who's the kos hatov? I said, great, excellent. Who's the kos hatov? So I'll tell you what the Torah is telling us. That we have to teach our children kibud av aim in a za oifen, that when they get older, they'll have a kos hatov to us. Do you think that'll work if you hit them and whack them with a hammer all the time and yell at them? How will your children grow up to have a kos hatov to you, to be mekayem kibud av aim because of a kos hatov to you, if you didn't do l'shevis yitzar? If you put everything in front of it, if you didn't do your own work. The sugya of parenting is kibud av aim. We have to do parenting in a way that when our kids go up, al sakor satoiv, they'll be mechaved us. They'll be so grateful to us. He rather loved the teretz, I have to tell you. But I think it's a teretz amiti. We have to be disciplined, we have to be structured, there are rules, there's Torah, there's halacha. Do it all in a way that when your kids experience it at the time, they're experiencing it not intellectually, pre-intellectual, they're experiencing it as, my father's doing this for me. This is in my best interest. So that therefore, when they matriculate and become older, they're molly hakaras hatoiv for what my father gave me.
It's very popular today for 30, 40, 50-year-old mothers and maybe grandmothers to turn to their mother, who's 70, 80, 85, or father, and say, you know, you really did not know how to be good parents. You guys were, which they wouldn't even conceive in their nightmares to say to the previous generation.
Sure.
But today, you don't know what it means to be a parent. You didn't know how to deal with us. And very often parents, Zaydis already, Babas, Elters, get very defensive. We had Mr. Nefesh. We had not a penny to our name. I gave you everything. This is your ungratefulness, the chutzpah. And then I get an email, the today's generation. So how should they respond? How should the 65 or 75-year-old mother, who's now being accused of emotional neglect, indifference, stupidity, ignorance, complete no understanding of what chinuch is, and now her daughter, who is struggling with her own kids, is saying this to her mother, and the mother gets very defensive.
I don't blame her. I don't think there's anything therapeutic to be achieved by lashing out against one's parents. You know, there but for the sake, for the grace of God, go I. If I had been born in that generation, I wonder what I would have been like. So lashing out and blaming, I've never seen a Toelis. I do see a Toelis in grasping my internal pain and hurt in a therapeutic setting. You know, there's ways in therapy, excellent ways of dealing with that and overcoming it. So I'd like to shift, you know, that the model, that's not therapeutic, but it is therapeutic to acknowledge my pain and anger and hurt in a therapeutic environment, in a therapeutic process to get rid of it. But when a parent hears it, I can tell you what I did with my kids. I apologized. Mm. I evoked their pain, and I apologized. I went into therapy with them, those who wished, and said, I was not there for you. I did not see your suffering, and I take responsibility. And all that happened was my kids being mechabed me more and loving me more. It never hurt, ever.
So you had to be very introspective.
Well, I wasn't there at the beginning, but I understood. I did not see what they were hurting with. I thought I was doing a great job. Actually, people in the early days, they thought the Russells had a beautiful home. No, they did. People said it. It's very interesting. They used to think we were like nice people. You know, I asked my wife many times, are we nice? I think we are, no? So it seemed to me we're good people and we're nice people. But
so you're saying when parents can acknowledge the pain of their children rather than become defensive.
Kodesh Baruch Hu made this world in a way that the nature, the teva, ingrained, imprinted in the neshama of a child is to love and respect and want that love from their parents. Hashem made the world that way. We all know as we get older, if you still have older parents, you know you're dying for them to say, I'm proud of you. Right? You're just dying. Everyone's dying for it. Even you're 60 years old and they're 90 and you just want to hear it. Hashem made it that way. If, again, this can't be an answer for all situations and all people and all circumstances. But if parents are able to do the work on themselves to simply acknowledge to their children, I didn't see, I didn't know, and I hurt you. And I would love to know, and I want to hear, and I'm willing to do the work on myself to see if I can find a way that this doesn't happen again. It is the nature of a child to crave that relationship and want to be Michael and want to let go and want to re-embrace that relationship. I think that many times parents who haven't done the work on themselves end up in a headspace where, no, kibbutz of aim is kids respecting us. It's not the other way around. And we all know it's not true, but they haven't done the work yet. And that may not even be their fault.
So I guess they make their children feel there's nobody to talk to. I can't have a real connection with my parents.
Correct.
I just have to placate them and say the right thing.
But if we really dig deep, and nisht aimal, you understand, you may have to do it many times. But if you're committed, I don't care if it takes me 10 years. I literally don't care if for 10 years one of my kids is going to like be mad with me and hurt me and whatever. You know, that may have happened. And so what? This world is Zerkodesh, this world is Chalayim, Yachasit, Olam Haba. So what? Who cares if it took me 10 years? Let me do the work. Let me take it on the chin. And let me apologize. Not pathetically, not like I'm a nebuch and, you know, a bad person. I'm not a bad person. I'm a good person. But at the same time as being a good person, I grew up with certain traumas. I grew up with parents who were traumatized. I had certain blank spots. I was blinkered. It wasn't deliberate. I didn't go to the store and buy those blinkers. I had them, and I didn't see you. And because I didn't see you, I hurt you. You know, I've yet to find a child. I've done this in my office so many times, I can't even tell you. It's from the greatest work I've ever done is to watch the repair between children, adult children and their parents. I cry with them when they cry. We all cry in the room because It is such the nature that Hashem put in a child to want to respect the parents, love them, and want to be Meichel. All it needs is that true, humble, authentic, vulnerable honesty. And when it happens, magic can happen.
Hmm. So you mentioned before something very powerful that I just want to zoom into. You said what Pnimius HaTorah gave you was that shift of paradigm, that paradigm shift, where instead of seeing it just as a given, these are the kids and they're pretty rotten and spoiled and filling my life with trouble, you actually redefined yourself as an Eved Hashem.
Correct.
I work for Hashem.
Right.
Hashem put these souls into our home. This is their journey. And my role is to show up with humility and love.
That was exactly what happened. I realized these are his children, not mine.
Mm. It's not personal.
It's not personal. He gave me these kids, but they were his. These neshamas are his. They're not mine. We don't own the neshamas of our children. They're his. And my job is to show up in a compassionate, authentic, loving, caring way with boundaries, structure, discipline, you know, the stuff kids need to thrive in life. But show up that way to do his job. In fact, I remember specifically on a couple of occasions davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where I gave up ownership back to him of some of my children and said, these are yours more than they're mine. Please help me do the job for you. Help me do the job for you.
And that allowed you to show up rather than become enmeshed.
Correct.
With the Correct. Problems and the crisis.
Yeah, I let go of owning them. I let go of viewing myself and my success through their success.
Right. That's a big thing. For so many parents, it's your success that will prove.
So my wife and I, we collected friends. I collect friends. You know, some people like stamps and coins. I like friends. And my whole life, we've become good friends. I collect friends. I like good friends. And amongst our friends, we were privileged to have friends who were remarkable people, special people, who had wonderful kids, who got through the system well. Ruba de Ruba, they did marvelously. And they went to all the appropriate yeshivas and got married, did the right shidduchim, and things worked out very well for them. They were our dear friends. In the early days, my wife and I would drive home from their simchas in silence.
Mm.
In silence. And it was a painful experience. And we were grateful for them. It wasn't any jealousy, trust me. We were just delighted and grateful for them. Over the years, we began to see what our children had done for us and to us. What was more fascinating than all was when our friends reflected back to us how deeply they appreciated our friendship, and what we were doing was so moving to them and so inspiring to them. And I think that's what, you know, we don't realize. You know, people watch us. So there are those who may say, who's Russell to be giving drashas on chinuch? I got it. I know that. I accept that. But there are also, everywhere I go, people who are reading the book or listening to the drashas who are telling me, thank you. You're changing our lives. Our own lives. Not just our children. Our own lives. We're becoming, look, to me those two words, authenticity and vulnerability, are probably the two biggest middas I noticed missing in our world. In our Olam
HaTorah. People feel if they'll be authentic and vulnerable, their kids won't get into seminary, their yeshivas, no shidduchim, and their standing in the community will...
Yeah, and I think there's a shift happening, grassroots, bottom-up shift happening in our world where people, young people, for sure, this I have no suffix about, the third generation, like my children's age, are craving authenticity
and vulnerability,
and discovering that those two midas free you up in all your avodas Hashem. It changes your relationship to God. It changes your relationship to humanity. And that's where you break through the ego stuff, when you decide to be vulnerable and be honest. This is who I am, with the gifts Hashem gave me and the challenges Hashem gave me. And I will simply try to do the best with whatever He gave me, what my lot is in this world. And I'll try to do it authentically. When I left home, my father, Shalom, he took me to the airport in Heathrow. I was 18, I went off to yeshiva. My father was not a man of words after the war. And we went to the airport. He told me, check in. I said, I've never been on a plane. I don't know how to do it. So he looked at me and said, well, then why do you think you can go to Israel to yeshiva? Go work it out. So I worked out how to check in. And then he walked me into a bar in Heathrow Airport. I never did this in his life. And we both had a glass of whiskey. He needed it for him, for sure, not for me. I'd never done this in my life to me, ever. And then he walked out, and I followed him. And halfway out of the airport, he turned to me, put his hand on my shoulder. He said to me, Shimon, my name was Simon then, my English name. He said, Simon, he said, do what you think is right, and do it with conviction. And then he left. And I collapsed on the floor in Heathrow and cried and cried and cried. I realized my childhood had just come to an end. And he'd summed up everything he wanted to teach me in these two lines. Do what you think is right and do it with conviction. Vulnerability, authenticity. Try and live like that. And somehow, it's bizarre in a way, but that's what I've tried to do. And I don't think it's hurt me. I mean, we're good friends. Has it hurt me?
To the contrary.
Right?
You're saying this is what liberates the need to be self-conscious and impressive and get validation destroys our psyche.
It destroys us completely.
We are miserable people because of it.
And you're always worried about the next drasha. How will you look? Like, will the olam be mekabel me? It's like, it's so much better to mess up on the next drasha and then say, I'm so sorry, I was tired. Be authentic, be vulnerable.
You're saying to be an Eved Hashem is the most liberating psychological experience.
It is, absolutely, 100%. Anachnu ma, what am I? I don't know, I'm just going to do the best, lefi koichi, like I said, from the Psikta.
I'm a channel.
Let me try and show up and do the best I can. And your kids will see that. And there's something magical will come to them. As we saw, when our family stabilized, Nishnah stabilized, but, Baruch Hashem, or I can say that my wife and I have rov nachas from our children in a very unique way and a special way, watching them in their journeys, their authenticity, their vulnerability, and finding their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's been very, very heartwarming. Very heartwarming.
You know, it's hard. There's a line from the Baal HaTanya. He once said, Kol inyan ha-chassidus l'shanes teva midaysav. The whole purpose of chassidus is to work on yourself.
Right.
When you'll ask a lot of, let's call them chassidus yidden, who grew up with it, very often they'll tell you, for us, what it really means is to fit into the system, to make sure we're perfect families, to make sure our children are filled with Torah and Yerushalayim and midays chassidus. And really, it seems like that this core that you're talking about, both from the Vilna Gaon and the Baal HaTanya, which come from two different schools, that's all about working on yourself internally.
Right.
How did that get forgotten by so many of us?
It's
emotionally.
I think that, rightly so, certainly after the Holocaust, the mandate of Gedolei Yisrael was rebuilding the infrastructure. Mm. I think the survival and authenticity of both the Olam HaTorah and the Olam HaChassidus, they put the dogish on the infrastructure. And rightly so. Take a look, we're here. I mean, Kanein Har, it's remarkable what happened. Absolutely remarkable. But at the same time, on a grassroots level, I don't think it's a contradiction at all, that at the same time, on an individual level, I see that people resonate to the deeper ideas of my own Tikkun Amidas, is where my relationship of Dovka Bai lies. That's where it is. Without my Tikkun Amidas, how will I be humble? How can I be an Onov? How can I even daven? What is tefillah? The essence of tefillah is humility, that I'm coming on to you, Bari Aylon. I'm coming on to you because I can't. Because I can't. So, Tikkun Amidas, you know, it's, you know, Mr. Sasham says, you know, what people will think of people when they work on their Midas. But it's clear to me that this generation and its struggles is taking us to this inevitable place, I think historically, where we're going to be forced to look at an authentic mechanchim. You know, I always quote over a line. My mother, Aleha Shalom, she was a master teacher. We had brothers, not alive anymore, worked for the education department in London. And he told us that she, where we lived, she was number two teacher. Ranked number two. It's a very chashuv thing. So I asked her one time, I said, Mommy, what do you think made you number two teacher? She said, when I walked into the classroom, like this, when I walked into the classroom every day, I wanted to present myself as a person the Talmidim would want to be. If they want to be me, because I deal with them, act and conduct myself in a way that they want to be me, so that my knowledge is easy to convey to them. They want that knowledge because they want to be me. Mm. It was so beyond profound, so amazing.
Wow.
And it's the heart and soul of all chinuch. The mechanech, to be received by the chonech, the one who's to be received. Well, the child has to look at you and see a person they would want to be. And when they do, well, they want your knowledge because they want to associate with you. They want to be connected to you. They value you. So this whole system is such a win-win in terms of Dveikas Bayis Barach and Avedis Hashem. Having children, you know, the there's a famous piece about, you know, Stakel Baraisa Bar Yolma, right? So the Eibishter, why do we have a Metzias of parents and children? Why don't children drop off trees like apples? Let them fall off trees, and they'll plant themselves in the ground, and they'll grow, and boom, and then they'll walk off, like human beings. What do we need a Metzias of parents and children for? And the answer is because of the mitzvah kibud av aim. There's a mitzvah kibud av aim. You need the struggle of being mechaved your parents. You need the struggle of being a parent. That's the stakel b'raisa b'ra'olma for your tikkun neshama. So therefore, the Eibishter created the metzias of parents and children, because the Torah said that's the way the neshama reaches its tikkun. And without parents and children, it wouldn't do it. You know how freeing it is to understand that? It's like, okay, so all the problems caused in families with sibling rivalry, with ishus ben ish l'ishtai, and then parents and children with the ego and all these struggles, is exactly why the Eibishter gave us the metzias of parents and children, a marriage. Because in that crucible, you're going to have to work on yourself. There is no alternative. And that is the best vehicle for your tikkun amidus in this world. You can't do it anywhere else. You can't do it properly. You can do it, but not to this level. Ben Azai said he's going to do it without, right? I think he was the one chiddush, am I right? In all of
Nafshi Chashka B'Torah.
Right? There's one chiddush that he could do this without. Right, am I right? No one else. Everybody else, we need a spouse and children and in-laws and grandparents. And
Rabbi Akiva says, Shaliva Shalachem Shalahu. All my achievements, right, is her credit.
That's if we would just see that, as I always say, your problems are not in your way. They are your way. If you just see that, then we can bring our authentic, loving self to our children.